is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To ascertain the south of France, Simon Constable, writing for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, Forbes, other distinguished publications. We begin, however, with real time. Paris, the protests by pensioners and their allies across the land, right now concentrating on energy resources, refineries. What does that mean? Not for Macron, he can take care of the government in Paris, but for Simon and his friends in Occitane. This is the agrarian base of France. They need fuel for those tractors and for the farm equipment that is now important to maintain, to get the crop out. It's springtime. Simon, you drive a diesel, petrol vehicle. Is there any indication of shortages at your forecourt? Any talk of your neighbors not being able to get enough diesel for their tractors? Good day to you.
Good day to you, John. Not yet. The answer is not yet do we have a problem in getting this stuff, but I did take the precaution of going down to the petrol station to fill up the car with diesel this morning, and I think that was a very good idea.
Any signs at the forecourt at the petrol station? Any indication that there might be shortages coming?
None so far.
We come now to the question of what does this mean for commodities? Nothing across European Union. We have reason to believe that the natural gas prices will be maintained, that the petrol prices will be maintained, and it's springtime, certainly springtime in Occitane. So we go from 2023 to 2008. This was a very bad year. Let me emphasize that. But Simon and I had fun because after the crash, and everything crashed, after the crash, we were free to observe how the institutions that heretofore had been lordly were no longer lordly. In many instances, the management just disappeared in disgrace. Simon, you write of 15 years ago right now. I understand we can celebrate the IPO of Visa, but I'm interested in Bear Stearns. What happened, Simon, and how did you jest about it with a $2 bill?
This was a very dramatic period in everybody's life who was living in New York at the time. I went down to the New York Stock Exchange floor with $2, and I took a video camera, and I asked the four traders there, what can I get for $2? And it was an immediate sigh of oh, this is awful, awful, awful from that floor trader. And I guess I can understand why he felt that way, but it was the right thing to say. Bear Stearns collapsed. It had been buying too many subprime bonds. Those were the bonds that were given to institutions when people had mortgages, but the people who took the mortgages had no income, no assets, and no job. So it wasn't really surprising.
$2 could buy you a share. Did he make the deal? They were looking for customers.
He did not make the deal. JP Morgan had decided to take over the company at that point and did that, and it's been reasonably successful with the assets that it's bought, but it was terribly bad for all the people who were working at Bear Stearns at the time, as it was for most people on Wall Street from 2008 right through the end of 2010.
My memory, Simon, is that I didn't understand entirely, but there was the Bush administration intervening in some fashion to guide Bear Stearns' sale to JP Morgan. Initially, there was a much higher price than $2. I think I remember 10, something like that. But Jamie Dimon, then the head of JP Morgan, made the $2 offer. And my memory of you were at the Wall Street Journal. You were making videos for the Wall Street Journal. The explanation was that Bear Stearns was an outlier, that they managed their business very badly, that they were guided by men and women who weren't paying attention to the fragility of the housing market. This is the beginning of what we now know to be the housing collapse. But then we didn't know it. And Bear Stearns
We didn't know. And what we did know about Bear Stearns, it had a very trading mentality with traders buying and selling securities. That was the core of a lot of what Bear Stearns did. So when you look at traders, they're often seen as very much risk takers, and risk takers was not something that the world wanted to hear about right then. So yes, you're right, it was seen as an anomaly.
And that anomaly led to a summer of watching the prices paid for interest, for borrowing, climb and climb and climb. So the best customers were seeing the cost of money go up all summer. And this was another warning. It was also the failure of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and all of the institutions that were near government institutions backing up bonds. It's a long story, but 15 years ago today, you never know what the catastrophe is. You don't know the black swan. And your first explanation, just like on 9/11, was, oh, a small airplane ran into the World Trade Center, just like an airplane ran into the Empire State Building right after the war. You rationalize it. Be warned. The outliers are the future. We go now to a future that is positive for students. Simon writes up for the Wall Street Journal. These days, Simon, there's much news here anticipating a Supreme Court decision over the intention of the Biden administration to forgive a certain quantity of debt by students over these last years. The big number is like in the trillions, but what Mr. Biden proposes is to forgo up to $20,000 of student debt. Better that you don't compile the debt to begin with to get a higher education. What have you discovered in Berlin and other parts of Europe?
Well, what's long been the case has been that European universities charge a heck of a lot less, even the private ones, than do American universities. So I looked up the figures for Harvard, and for the forthcoming year, it will be $50,000 for tuition and then another $20,000 for living expenses. I looked up some public German universities, and a lot of them teach in English, and they are free of tuition fees, and you just have to pay a small admin fee of about $300 a year, plus some books, and have $11,000 to live on, and you can get your student visa. It's an amazing deal. I talked to some of the students there. The difference in the teaching is quite sharp. It's rigorous and brain-stretching, and there's no hand-holding, which might be a shock for some American undergraduates, but the price is very good.
It resembles the college I went to back in the ancient days of the mid-20th century. No hand-holding. The surprising thing is I can testify that one of my children attended St. Andrews University, which is a very good reputation in Britain and throughout the world. But in any event, there was no hand-holding. It affords an American student a platform to travel. My son was able to reach Africa, the Iberian Peninsula, deep into Eastern Europe, all the way to Jerusalem. This is in the course of 4 years. So going to Berlin would be, make it that even easier. Plus, the language, Simon. How do students handle the language?
Well, students are taught in English at various courses across Germany. And that really helps with people coming from America who might not know a second language. Picking up German at a basic level, particularly for an undergraduate, will be relatively easy. I studied German for 3 years in high school, and apart from the grammar parts of it, I actually did manage to pick up enough words to get by. So I think most American students will be able to pick up enough for conversation maybe 6 months into being there, and that's pretty good.
And German universities are older than I even think your British universities in many instances. These are extremely scholarly places, and the lecture halls are very large, to my understanding. And you write of a young man from California, I believe, who finds it quite attractive to go there. It doesn't cost him a lot of money. He travels. He looks perfectly as if he's at home in 1966. It's wonderful. He's reverted to form, sort of bohemian.
And all the people I spoke with for this story were very much grateful for the fact that they actually did study in Germany and not back in the U.S. And I think that's a very, very promising thing. People who go to new places quite often come back and say, well, maybe that was a mistake and I shouldn't have done it. But none of the people I spoke to felt that way.
And you don't graduate with a bill of $20,000 or $40,000 or $80,000. This is also true for Milano, also true for Paris, also true for Barcelona. Other universities have much the same style as Germany, if I understand correctly. You have a large lecture hall and you have a paper due at the end of the term or one big exam, and that's your grade. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I went to St. Andrews University as well, and basically you have to have this idea that everything on your final paper is everything for your degree or your module or whatever you're going to be doing there. I felt a lot of pressure when I was doing that, but everyone else felt the same pressure, and you put the effort in, and there was no way you could change it after you had either done very well or done very badly. And luckily I did very well, but some people didn't. And that's a lot of pressure, and some people cannot take that.
And you can travel, and it's cheaper. And those of you considering your college choices, that's coming in the springtime. Consider Berlin, consider Italy. Certainly the ancient universities in Italy predate anything in America or in Britain. Simon Constable, writing for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and other distinguished publications 15 years ago. Bear Stearns, I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.